Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. For more information on Concordia University, visit our website, kfuo.org, and look for their logo in the sponsor section. This week, we're talking about fun in the sun, activities for families and kids to keep us going through the summer. For some of us, the summer is lazy. For some of us, it's very busy. And today we're getting into the topic of keeping those reading skills strong throughout the summer. All that work that they put in over the last school year, want to make sure that they're able to maintain those skills that they gained throughout the summer and not just drop off everything during the summer. If you'd like to join us for the conversation here in the studio, give us a call in the St. Louis area. It's 314-821-0850. Outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us 1-800-730-2727 or email us in the studio at family@kfuo.org. Well, our guest today is Brenda Dunseth, and she is the head of youth services at a public library in the area. So welcome.
Thank you, Andy. Nice to be here.
It's kind of a fun topic to get into today, talking about summer reading. And I was thinking about fun in the sun. How do we make reading fun during the summer? And certainly we can sit inside in the air conditioning, but why not take the book out to the pool too, right? Take a whole stack and sit by the pool or get out in the yard and enjoy some books out there.
Of course, there are a lot of ways to make reading fun, and summer is the perfect time for that.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Brenda. I mentioned you're the head of youth services in one of the public libraries in the Detroit area. What does that mean? What do you do in youth services?
Well, that means I'm responsible for planning programming and setting goals and deciding what's going to happen in the youth department during the summer and during the school year. And the summer compared to the school year is very different. In the summertime, as you can imagine, we open the doors at 10 o'clock and there is a stream of people coming in. During the school year, we start out slow and end with a bang at the end of the night with all the homework questions. So we kind of have to be ready to be prepared for everything, and I try to stay on top of that.
So you sound pretty busy.
It is very busy right now, but we love that. And I love the variety of summer, how in the summertime, as you mentioned, we have the summer reading program that prevents children from backsliding. If you think about the brain as a muscle, if we don't exercise our muscles, we start getting flabby. But the beauty of summer reading is that the children get to explore their own interests, and they get to read what they like when they want to read it. And it's also a great teaching time for parents. Summertime ends up being a wonderful time for parents and children to share their reading together.
That's two great points. You know, it can lead to some family time together, family activities, but also that there's no pressure on the summer reading. You know, they're not reading for a specific project at school or a book report or a book review or anything like that. They just have the opportunity to read for fun.
You're right. And to explore their own interests. I think summertime is a time when parents should keep a close eye on what their children are reading. They can learn about a lot from their children about what they're reading, what their interests are.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, it can certainly be a relationship builder between the parent and child. You certainly can pick up on what your child loves, what's interesting to them just by the books they're picking out. Maybe it's just because it had a great cover.
Correct. You never know what's going to attract a child. And I do. The nice thing about libraries compared to school time. Parents go off to work. Children go off to school. Neither one really knows what's going on in the other's life. But when you use the public library or any library that has adult and children's materials, it's kind of a shared experience. You're going there with the same goal. You leave with books that you can read yourselves and that you can read together. So it really is a fun family time. And a lot of families take advantage of that to come weekly, sometimes twice a week, to pick up books during the school year as well as during the summer.
Mm-hmm. So, give us an example of some of the different programs. I would assume they probably are for various ages. What are some ideas for various ages in the youngest readers? What are some of the youngest readers that you get?
Well, we actually start our reading program with babies. We allow babies to join the program. This is the first year we've done that. And really, as you can imagine, when we have babies participating in a program, what we're really doing is training the parents.
Absolutely.
We're trying to get the parents to come in once a week and become familiar with the library. During the school year, we offer programs, baby programs, that model reading to the parents, but we do mostly playing for those babies. Mm-hmm. This summer, we tried something different where we're doing a painting program for babies. And again, you can imagine it's somewhat risky painting with babies, but children actually can, by splattering and using their fingers, create things that parents are proud of. Children have fun doing, and again, we're teaching parents how to work with their children.
Mm-hmm. So the youngest children, it might not necessarily be that they're reading, do those programs also encourage parents to read to their children?
Yes, of course, they sure do. And we really focus on the typical storytime programs that you have in a library are all about the children, but they also focus on the parents in modeling how you can read to your children. Because I think a lot of us, and me included, when my children were younger, sometimes reading became a task, something you did before bed. Sometimes you even tried to skip pages so you could get to the end, be done, and go off and finish the work you have to do to wash the dishes or whatever you need to do. But really, reading is meant to be a shared experience for the enjoyment and the educational value. So in the story times, we teach parents that they talk to their children while they're reading the story. You talk to them about the story. You ask open-ended questions. Which was your favorite picture? What do you think is going to happen next? You'll take time to define new vocabulary words. And when children are young, there are a lot of new vocabulary words. So, but also as Christian parents, we can look for biblical tie-ins and moral lessons in the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We also, I don't know, the Common Core, it can be a bad word to some people. Some people like it, some people don't. But have you heard of the Common Core standards that they're trying to introduce in the schools?
I have, but maybe you could explain it a little bit more for the sake of that.
I'm not an expert on them because I'm not a teacher, but they are trying to standardize education a little bit. They're asking teachers to change the way they teach and to change the things that they teach. I don't necessarily know that I agree with everything in the Common Core. What I do like is that they are asking children to read more nonfiction. Traditionally, we've focused on novels, on stories, on narrative writing, but there's a lot of value in nonfiction, and it's a completely different kind of reading. So if we can start training our children from their youngest days to enjoy both fiction and nonfiction, there's really some value to that as they grow older.
That's a really good point that I hadn't thought of. I'm more a nonfiction reader, and
okay.
So I don't
mm-hmm.
spend a lot of time reading fiction. But I could see how children probably would be drawn more to the adventure of nonfiction. So that makes that's a good point.
Well, and it also gives us an opportunity as parents to, from the very youngest age, teach the children between fact and fiction. And I'll give you an example. We put books together, we pair what we call, we have something that we call concept pairs, and we pair a picture book with a nonfiction companion. And one example is a book called Pig Pig Meets the Lion. And there's a little pig, he's lying in bed, and in his window comes a lion. And he jumps out of bed and is running around the house trying to avoid the lion. His mother is too busy making breakfast and watching the television about how a lion has escaped from the zoo, so she doesn't notice what's happening. And this book actually teaches prepositions because Pig Pig is going over and under, up and down to escape the lion. At the end of the story, the lion tackles Pig Pig, gives him a big lick on the face. They both giggle, and they run off to chase again. Now, we have paired this with a nonfiction book about lions to say, where do lions live? What do they eat? What do you call a baby lion? So again, then you can compare the cartoon picture of the lion mm-hmm. with the factual book about lions. So you're teaching children the difference between fact and fiction, narrative and expository text. And by the way, I talked about bringing in biblical tie-ins and moral lessons. I had recently been studying Isaiah. And when I read that book, Pig Pig Meets the Lion, it made me think about a spot in Isaiah where it talks about God's kingdom and how peaceful that will be, and how the cow will feed with the bear and the young will lie down together and the lion will eat straw like the ox and the infant will play by the hole of the cobra. So that's kind of something that you can tie in to talk about children. While you are talking about that picture book, you can talk about what might it have been like in the Garden of Eden. So there's a lot of things you can do with picture books, much more than you realize.
All great examples, and you're so right in that using reading together fiction and nonfiction too can lead to good conversations about what God teaches us in His Word about creation and about life together. All of these things, you know, those could be great teaching opportunities. Teaching,
oh, they really are. You're right. They're just wonderful, and it doesn't stop when the children are young. As the children get older, sometimes it becomes more challenging. Not long ago, I had a father come into the library with his son, who was probably 10 or 11 years old. They walked right past my desk, and as they passed by, I heard the father say, "Pick a book. We're not leaving until you pick a book." And the boy had that look on his face that I've seen before. And apparently the boy did not pick his book fast enough, and I heard the father say a little while later, "If you don't pick something, I'm going to pick something for you." And he picked up a book on princesses, and he said, "And this is what I'm going to pick." And so I could see things were getting heated, so I jumped up and I said, "Can I help you?" And the father explained, "My son is addicted to video games. I want to get him off. He needs to read a book." He was obviously impatient. The boy was embarrassed, and so I spent some time trying to find some books the boy was interested in. He didn't want anything that I had to offer, but he spotted a craft that we were going to be making for an upcoming program. And as part of making that craft, you needed to first read this book. Well, that was okay to him. He thought the craft was cool, so he wanted to join the program. He took the book home. Both dad and boy left smiling, and I was so pleased because I really thought it was going to end in a disaster. But it didn't.
What a great example. What a success story, too.
Well, it was. It was fun. And I guess as long as we're talking about that, the benefits of playing with crafts and using things to pull kids in, again, we spoke about bringing God's Word into it. The book that attracted that boy was actually a book about a wizard. And I remember when my children were younger, stories like Harry Potter were pretty controversial in the Christian schools. We did read the book with our children, and I guess I think as Christians a lot of time we worry about the unbelieving world around us, and we try hard to expose our children to the things of God and avoid worldly things. But we could also, especially as the kids are getting older, we'll want to use those moments as teaching moments. When our kids are little, we avoid getting them near a hot stove. But as they begin to walk, suddenly their world expands and we can't protect them from everything, so we have to teach them what to avoid. It's the same when it comes to things of the world. As our children are getting older, they're going to read things that we don't necessarily agree with. They're going to be exposed to those things. So I guess I look at those as teaching moments. And in the case of the boy with the wizard book, we were making a wizard craft. Now, you could listen to this book together on audio. You could read it together. You could make a wizard craft, but you could also take a moment to say, "Do you know the first book that was ever written that has a wizard staff in it was the Bible? Aaron and Moses used a staff. It turned into a snake, I think, and didn't it turn the river into blood and call in a plague of frogs or all kinds of things? But it wasn't the magic of the staff that made all those things happen. It was God's Word along with that made those things happen." So you can compare that to baptism, water and the Word, to the Lord's Supper, you know, the wine and the host with God's Word. So there's a lot of ways you can bring in God's Word and simple discussions. You don't have to beat kids over the head with these lessons. You can just simply mention it as you're making a wizard staff together.
Right, right. All good examples that, you know, reading together and can open those doors to teachable moments to help develop that ethos, that worldview of the world around us. We obviously can't protect our children and shelter them from the whole world around us, but also gives them an example. It gives them an opportunity to see us, to see parents as a role model in how they perceive and interact with the rest of the world as well, and how we respond to the world around us.
You are right. And I always say the best thing about a good reading program is parental involvement. The best thing about a school, a good school education, is parental involvement, and that's key to the success of passing our faith on to our children.
Well, speaking of parental involvement, we have a caller on the line who would like to, I believe, have a question or comment for us. Dana in Fort Wayne, is that right?
Yes, yes, thank you very much. I'm enjoying the conversation quite a bit. My comment, and somewhat of a question, relates to what you were just talking about, which is, I'm a parent of three children, and we're a family of readers, so we love to read. We utilize our public library quite a bit, and I just have noticed in the last few years, especially in the young adult sections, that there are a lot of worldviews that are not Christian that are coming into some of the literature for children, and especially sort of the preteen. And I guess I'm just wondering, as a Christian parent, I mean, it's not really possible for me to read every single book that my children are reading, but how to be aware of that, and also maybe what to look for and how to bring up some of those issues, especially family issues and sexual issues that are really, you know, difficult when you're dealing with, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old
children. No, I agree. It is very difficult, and I don't think I have the perfect answer, because it is challenging. Obviously, you can look as a lot of the books that the other kids are going to be talking about, you may be lucky enough to find a review. But I read reviews before I purchase books, and some of the things that you mentioned aren't necessarily brought up. So we may purchase a book for the library, and obviously all librarians have different worldviews. We're not all Christians. So, but sometimes, even as a children's librarian, I'll purchase a book and I get it, and a patron will say something to me about some content in there, and I don't think it is appropriate for the youth department, but it wasn't mentioned in the review. So you're right, it is hard. There is a website that I like to consult. It's called commonsensemedia.org. When they do review books, and again, this is not a Christian, but they do have common sense values. When they do review a book, and they review a lot of the popular books, they kind of give an age range, which they think it's appropriate for. Whenever I have an age range on a review, I often higher it a little bit, because I think the world in general accepts a little bit more than I feel comfortable with. So if they say it's good for a 9-year-old, I might wait till 10. But they do give an age range. They kind of rate the books by their educational value, positive messages, positive role models. They also will highlight if it's got violence, sex, language, drinking, drugs, smoking. So that's probably one of the most complete sites I've found. You can, of course, go to someplace like Amazon and read the review. Or there is a website called Goodreads that you can join, which is kind of a chance for back and forth where you can speak with other people and recommend books. And you can join something like that. It's almost like a chat for people who read a lot.
That's Goodreads?
Goodreads, yes. And I can't remember if it's .org or .com, but Goodreads, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, and good luck. I know it's hard.
Thanks, Dana.
Thank you.
And I think another thing to probably consider is, you know, Dana brought up a good point that it's really hard to stay on top of everything that your child is reading. You're not going to have a chance to read everything and looking at the reviews. But what about what questions to be asking your children about what they're reading? You know, how do we open those conversations? And maybe that's a counselor question more so, but you know, what are the things that we should ask our kids when they're reading? First of all, I guess asking, what is it you're reading? You know, what do you think about it? And I don't know, what are some other questions that you think?
It is awfully hard to pull, especially as they get older, it's hard to pull out of them what they are reading. What do you like about it? But I guess I have to go back to that, training them up from the moment, you know, they are able to listen to stories, because you do need to start training them early to watch out for certain things. God talks about in Deuteronomy about when he gives the Ten Commandments, he talks to parents and says, teach your children, talking to them when you're sitting in your house, when you're walking by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. You know, so the moment that child is born, we are teaching them. And when it comes to literature and older children, don't stop reading to them or with them when they become teenagers. That's part of teaching them what to look for. Listen to audiobooks in the car. You've got a captive audience. Take that time to define words that might have a different meaning in that book than what you know as a Christian. There's a lot of talk about the redefinition of the word marriage. Well, there's recently I ran across an example of the redefinition of the word church. A coworker came to me and said, wow, you can get these great electronic books off of this website that's on the internet. Usually you have to pay all this money at Amazon, but you can download them onto your Kindle for free. And it's a church that is doing this. And I said, wow, a church is offering these free electronic books. I wonder why. That must be expensive. And then she listed some of the books that were free, and some of them were kind of racy. And I thought, well, wow, why is this church offering this? Well, I did some research into the site and into the church, and the church is given that church designation in Sweden, and their belief is that information is holy and copying is a sacrament. Piracy is okay. So talking to our kids, if you have a chance, you are not going to be able to read every book that your child reads, but if you can listen to some of those popular books together, don't avoid the ones that might be, I mean, you certainly don't want to be you don't want to read the really bad books together, but some of the popular novels that their friends are reading, it wouldn't hurt to listen to, pull out some of those words that are being redefined that don't mean the same thing that we know them to mean from God's Word. And sometimes that's just about all you can do. It is hard to keep up on everything the kids are reading, but training them is key.
Absolutely. And spending that time together, I like how you pointed out listening to books and audio together on a long car ride and places like that, that can really open those doors for conversations about what's going on, and so you can be aware of what they're reading and what they're thinking about when they're reading these things. As you mentioned, the example of the church and redefining the church, what do they think about that?
Right.
Getting their perspective on that.
Right. And not necessarily, and the fact that you can talk about the authors, and the caller mentioned different worldviews. If you're able to train them from the time they're young, they will be able to recognize different worldviews in how the author writes. They will also be able to recognize when somebody has their own worldview. So take the time to talk about authors. Somebody like Harriet Beecher Stowe from Uncle Tom's Cabin. That's a book that often they have to read in high school or in college. She was a pastor's wife. She used her pen to try to change the injustice of slavery. So that's an example of somebody with our same worldview who really did something great to change something that was really awful in our country. As a matter of fact, I think President Lincoln said to her when he first met her, "So you're the little woman who started the Great War." So that's kind of a fun thing to talk about. C.S. Lewis's friendship with J.R.R. Tolkien from Lord of the Rings, I think, was one of them a Christian, one of them not, but in their conversations, C.S. Lewis became a Christian through his conversations with J.R.R. Tolkien. So there's a lot of fun things to talk about with your older children about reading that can get those conversations going. And again, some of those controversial novels. I recently read Lord of the Flies. Have you read that book?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember if I have. It was such a long time ago. I don't remember the content.
Yes. Well, a group of boys are shipwrecked on an island, and the author does a wonderful job of showing what it would be like to live in a society that has no rules, mm-hmm. no government, and how human nature takes over and what they do to one another. It's a wonderful book I would never read it to younger children. It's more for high school, maybe going into college. A great chance to talk about the Ten Commandments, why God gave people the Ten Commandments, why he establishes governments, why we obey our government, that kind of thing. So
all good stuff. All good stuff. We're going to take a quick break here in just a little bit. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about parents and summer reading programs for children. But also, we have an email with a question about grandparents and working with their grandchildren in summer reading. So we'll be right back with more on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Terry McAuliffe is running for governor in Virginia, and he's getting flack for attending a Washington, D.C. party while his wife was at the hospital getting ready to have their baby. McAuliffe also admitted that on the way home from the hospital with his wife and new baby, he stopped to attend a political fundraiser. He left his wife sitting in the car crying. When his other son was born, he got into a heated political argument with the doctors and got thrown out of the delivery room by a nurse. These aren't made-up stories by his opponent. McAuliffe wrote about them in his book called What a Party. I'm not endorsing or opposing this candidate, just relaying what's left a lot of husbands scratching their heads and thinking they'd never get away with anything like that. If Mr. McAuliffe wants to be Father of the Year, he'd better practice more.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS-recognized service organization.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod comes together every 3 years for a convention for three main goals: election of officers and other positions, conduct the business of the Synod as its principal legislative assembly, and finally for worship, Bible study, and fellowship. Join Worldwide KFUO as we broadcast live from the 65th convention, from the beginning divine service on July 20th to our wrap-up show on July 25th. See the full schedule at worldwidekfuo.org.
Attending the LCMS convention in St. Louis, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service invites you to meet the Reverend Dr. Leo Sanchez, author of the CTCR report, Immigrants Among Us, Sunday, July 21st, 12 to 1 p.m., right before Dr. Sanchez preaches for midday prayer, and Monday, July 22nd, 1 to 2 p.m., in the exhibition hall. Share how the study has been helpful to you, ask questions, and enter a special prize drawing only available during these times.
A federal judge has blocked a California city from erecting a veterans memorial that includes the depiction of a grave marked by a cross. Judge Stephen Wilson issued a preliminary injunction barring the monument's installation outside a stadium in Lake Elsinore. The city had agreed to pay $50,000 for the monument, which depicts a soldier kneeling before a cross-topped grave. The American Humanist Association's William Burgess says,
when you see a tombstone with a cross on it, you think, oh, the person who's buried there is a Christian. When you see the government put up a monument to all soldiers who have died, they shouldn't be choosing one particular religion to identify those soldiers.
Attorney Kevin Snyder disagrees. He says a grave cross doesn't make the monument religious.
That is an iconic symbol of those who were killed in action, and it's etched on the public consciousness.
Snyder says he's prepared to defend the city when the case goes to trial October 1st. I'm Steve Coleman.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and enjoying those lazy, hazy days of summer. I wish, no. But I am having a good time this summer, actually. I get to talk about all kinds of great things this week on Faith and Family as we talk about fun in the sun. Today, we're talking with Brenda Dunseth, and she's got some great ideas for summer youth and summer reading programs. And so before the break, we were talking about parents and reading with their children and being aware of what your children are reading. We received an email Just before the break, Brenda, and I think you might know this person. His name's Vern Rod Zwanitzer.
Oh, yes, I do.
We know him around here, too. And he says, for my good friend Brenda, hi to you and Pastor Tom, how can grandparents provide stimulating books, book gifts to their grandchildren? Any sources or advice? His grandchildren are 9, 14, and 16.
Well, I have to say, I was going to bring up grandparents at the end of the program as one of the best resources parents have to help develop a love for reading in their children. We have got grandparents who come into the library quite often. I've got one grandmother who is going on her sixth grandchild. She begins bringing them to library programs as soon as they're old enough. When they get too old for the children's department and they're on their own, she brings in another grandchild. This is a retired teacher, and she's just a treasure. The kids, it's a special time for the grandparents to spend together. It's just so fun to see the grandparents. I even have grandpas bringing their grandkids into programs, and I love to see that. The nice thing about grandparents is grandparents have a little more time than we do as parents. One of my pet peeves is when a parent will come in and say a child has some homework to do, and the parent comes in and says, pick a book, we've got 5 minutes and we need to go. Well, they're not probably going to really do a great job on their homework if they don't have time to find just the right book. Even Goldilocks and the Three Bears had to try every chair and every bowl of porridge before she found just the right one. But grandparents have that time. And if you're not close physically to the grandchildren, I remember when we lived in China, when we were missionaries over in China, our parents sent cassette tapes of themselves reading stories to our toddlers. Mm-hmm. They also talked with the toddlers and told them a little bit about their day. So our children got to know our grandparents, their grandparents, through those cassette tapes. Nowadays, I have grandparents coming into the library saying, I'm going to Skype with my grandchild. Can you recommend a book that I can read with them? The other treasure that grandparents offer is that they, again, because they have a little more time, and sometimes because they're not quite as close to some of the issues, they can help grandchildren through some difficult things. I often have grandparents coming in looking for books on divorce because they recognize the difficulty a grandchild is having with a divorce. Parents are often, they have their own issues
that
they're dealing with, and they're not seeing the difficulty that their child is having. We'll give the grandparents a book on divorce. We might also give them a picture book like Llama Llama Mad at Mama, which is an adorable story about a mother who pushes her baby llama around in a shopping cart way too long, and he just loses it at some point, and he's mad at mama. Well, in a divorce case, children often are mad at their parents at times. They're feeling different things. Grandparents are a great resource for getting children, grandchildren to talk about that kind of thing.
Sure, and they can be kind of a safe zone.
They are a safe zone, and they just notice things a little bit more than parents are able to be in our busyness.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another caller on the line, and so now we're going to go to Kim in Freeburg with some a question or comment about summer reading encouragement. Kim, welcome.
Hi there. Hi, Brenda. I love everything you have to say today.
Well, thank you.
I'm a mother of three, and then I'm also a reading teacher. And at the end of the year, I'm flooded with questions and from parents basically about, you know, what programs to sign their kids up for and what extra classes they should take, you know, to get their reading to not, you know, fall behind before the next school year starts. And I agree with everything you're saying. I constantly tell them, you don't need to sign them up for all those extra classes and stuff. Just read with them. And especially the high-interest nonfiction, like you said. I think that is so important. And as our public schools start transitioning to more of that, I think if parents could get a head start with that over the summer, you know, and boys really tend to love the nonfiction if you can find something that interests them.
Yes, they sure do. I remember I had a fifth-grade tour last year, and I was talking about I had to talk about fiction, then I had to talk about nonfiction. And I was giving four good reasons to read nonfiction, and I don't remember what my four good reasons were. But at the end, a little boy raised his hand, and he said, no, there's five good reasons. I said, well, what's the fifth? And he said, it's fun. And I said, oh,
exactly.
You're right. So.
And then as a parent, I also kind of have a question. I have three little ones at home, and they absolutely love our community library. And it's set up so nicely for children, and there's a lot of areas for you know, quiet reading, but then also some interactive play. But I feel that pressure being in a library to keep them so quiet. But when they have the puppet shows going and they're doing all these interactive imaginary play things, it's hard to keep them quiet. Like, as a librarian, do you feel that that's important to keep them really quiet?
You know, traditionally we were always saying shh, but it has changed a lot. Sometimes some of your older librarians will still shush children, and there is some value in teaching children that there are certain places where you should be quiet, certain places where you can be loud. So yes, I do try to keep the voices down, but we don't frown on that kind of activity when they're. We also have puppets and a puppet theater and puzzles in a play area. And that
exactly,
play area,
yeah.
So, I mean, we're putting those toys there. We're tempting them, so we do understand that sometimes it gets a little bit louder. And when it is out of control, we will come over and say, could you guys just, you know, tone it down a little bit? But I think for the most part, that completely quiet library is probably more in a university library these days as opposed to a public library.
Sure, and even those have, you know, the university libraries that I've been to, even those have designated areas that are quiet areas and then other areas because of all the technology that we have now. I think that that the days of the entirely silent library are gone for the most part.
I agree.
Well, and I kind of felt that, you know, since they put these resources out there that, you know, hopefully they want the kids to use them and interact with them. But, you know, the whole stigma of the library, you know, needing to be quiet, I just feel that pressure to make sure they're almost absolutely silent while we're in there. So
yeah, well, and sometimes that's a personality thing depending on what librarian is working. We all have different tolerance levels, but I guess I would have to say if the toys are out there, they have to expect that there is going to be some noise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Kim. It was great to have you join us. What else can we think about? We've talked a lot about younger children. What about those the middle school years and even the high school years or beyond, preparing for college? That's probably a loaded question, probably another 2 hours worth of content. But
well, the middle school,
let's talk about middle school.
Okay. Yeah, well, we have a lot of resources that encourage that age group because you're right, about fourth, fifth grade, the reading starts dropping off and they begin to read only when they have to. One thing that has been really popular at our library, and I know a lot of other libraries do, is we have reader dogs that come into the library, and these are therapy dogs. The children will read to them, and it seems to especially work well for boys. And we have numerous dogs, numerous different breeds, and the boys want to read to every single one. That tends to be an encouragement. But also sometimes you might need to think outside of the box as far as what they should be reading. Maybe we're thinking about long novels. They've gotten to where they put a lot more pictures in novels, even for fourth and fifth graders, so that it breaks up the monotony of the words on a page a little bit. But also there's a lot of great books like Ripley's Believe It or Not, the Guinness Book of World Records. These are especially attractive to boys. Boys love facts a lot of times. Short stories are a great option for somebody who's overwhelmed by a really long book. Graphic novels, they're written in kind of a comic book format. Those are a little less intimidating. Joke books. I've had parents come in that say, you know, they have a 10-year-old boy that keeps telling them the same joke over and over. It's time to get something new. And so they're looking for joke books. They just can't pretend to laugh at it anymore. And then you being a theater person, Andy, you might be interested in, we have a lot of books called Reader's Theater books that actually put a story into a script. And that's a great family thing because each person in the family can take a character and read it out loud, and that encourages the kids to read as well.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, electronic books, the older kids tend to like the electronic books, and those are available at libraries. A lot of people think, oh, you just have the paper books. No, we don't. We've got electronic books to download on the Kindle or the iPad or whatever you're using.
That's a lot of stuff.
A lot. It's really hard to keep on top of it. I remember when I started at library school probably 7 years ago, they told us right at the orientation, if you don't like computers,
you're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place because everything is changing and you're going to need to work a lot with computers in the library.
Well, I want to go back to some of this low-tech technology that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard of this before. Reader dogs.
Reader dogs, yes. They're therapy dogs that are trained. They are certified to be gentle animals, and I think part of the training is more for the owner to make sure the owner has control of the animal. So they do have certificates. They actually have insurance, so if something should happen, but I have never had a problem with a reader dog. What happens is at our library, we will schedule appointments. A child will come in and read to the dog for 20 minutes. The dog lays down next to him. If it's a small dog, it'll jump right in his lap, and the child will read. And invariably, the owner stays in the room, but she does not pay attention. She reads her own magazine. And the child will often say, because the dog immediately closes its eyes and falls asleep, "Is he listening to me?" And the owner says, "Of course he is." But the kids somehow seem to really enjoy that. Again, we know there's something to animals, and mm-hmm. these same dogs will visit nursing homes and hospitals.
That's a great idea. I hadn't even thought of that before. It makes all perfect sense, you know, to get that practice reading, and someone's there listening, and they're not going to really argue with you about it either.
Well,
or criticize your reading.
Exactly right. And sometimes as parents, we do get a little bit critical because we're frustrated, we're anxious, mm-hmm. we don't understand why they keep messing up that same word again and again and again. But the dog isn't going to say anything. The dog owner, if the child asks, will turn around and help the child with something. But you're right, that's exactly what it is. It's a chance to read with just to have fun.
Yeah, and without a lot of criticism. Yeah,
exactly. Yep.
So middle school, we've covered. Let's talk about that student who's preparing for college.
Okay.
Any thoughts on that? The high school junior or senior who needs to, maybe they're a little behind on reading, or they really need to enhance those reading skills and think about preparing for college for the next year, or maybe they're trying to gear up for the ACT and SAT.
Yes.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, when you mention ACT and SAT, we have practice tests in the library. I did use those with my children, and I highly recommend them. I actually ended up buying one because it made it easier. You can't mark up ours at the library. We frown on that. So if you want to mark it up, you have to buy your own copy. But we do have them in the library, and they will take the kids through a practice test. I didn't bother timing them, and I started as early as, I think it was when the kids were actually freshmen in high school. During the summer, when they don't have as much to do, mm-hmm. having them practice taking that test just so they get the feel of it. And then by the time they actually had to take it in their junior year, they were more comfortable with it. I really highly recommend that. There are numerous resources by the Princeton Review. You can also, and if you look online, the Princeton Review offers free practice tests. They're hoping that after you take a practice test, that when you get your score back, you will sign up for one of their classes. You don't have to. They don't require that you do that. But the practice test is actually set up exactly like a real ACT or SAT, where you can go take it at a school, and they will send you your results that show you what you did well on, what you didn't.
And there's no pressure there.
No, there isn't a pressure. But yet you do have that same time constraint because you have to finish in the amount of time you would mm-hmm. normally have to take the test. So you really get a feel for the test. And it was very accurate as far as the weaknesses. So that's a nice opportunity. We have our library, and probably yours does as well, has databases where they have practice tests for just about anything, an ACT, an SAT. They also have practice tests for fourth grade English, fourth grade math, third grade math. So you can check that out. Ask your library if they have these databases to offer practice tests during the summer so children can brush up on some of those things that are challenging them during the school year. And then finally, as far as college students, we have got numerous tutors in the library these days. And when I say the doors open in the morning, most of those are tutors coming in to work with children because parents are worried about it. But I think you can work with a tutor, especially if you're concerned about a certain area, and as children are moving towards college, you may want to do that. But when your children are younger, just enjoy the time. Have them spend time in the library reading and without the pressure.
And for that high school student who's thinking about college and preparing for that, not only just doing the practice test for ACT and SAT, but in terms of reading and just relaxing during the summer without the pressure, would you again recommend both fiction and nonfiction, and any thoughts on that?
I definitely would recommend fiction and nonfiction. High school isn't really my specialty as far as what to read, but certainly the classics are going to be something they're going to be asked to read in college. They don't have to read Shakespeare in the summer or anything like that. They should just choose something that looks fun. But there are so many, when you talk about nonfiction, books that are written in a narrative fashion, but they're actually informational books. There's a lot of wonderful nonfiction books out there these days, and you can learn almost without realizing it. So, again, I think one of the most important things is to be sure you give your children lots of time to browse. And the thing about summer reading is we have summer reading programs for adults and for high school students and for children. Your high school student may not want to be involved, but make him come to the library with you if you can. And as a parent, you join summer reading, or at least read. Let them see you reading. Be an example to them. The boy that was addicted to video games, I kind of thought to myself, what were the mom and dad doing while he was playing video games? We parents often get busy doing things and not realizing that we're kind of addicted to something that we maybe should be
absolutely
taking a break from.
Yeah, screen time, as we call it. How much time do we spend in front of a screen? And that's actually a topic we'll cover in the not-too-distant future here on Faith and Family. We'll actually get to talk about that a little bit more in depth. And it's such an important thing that we face, and no matter what age, really, in this day and age. So having some time in books certainly can be valuable to engage us in conversation. There's something about books in general that open up conversations, open doors to conversations, and make us think. Technology, as great as it is, sometimes makes it easy for us not to think.
You're right, and we keep to ourselves a little bit more with the technology. That face-to-face time is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Your coworker actually mentioned to me that Luther was fascinated with Aesop's Fables and used them often he quoted them in his sermons and used them to teach. And he was working on a book translation of Aesop's Fables for children that he would use to teach children about God's Word and things of the faith. And so, again, books have great value whether they are written by Christians or not. A lot of books can be used to teach the things of God. And I can't stress enough how important it is for a parent or a grandparent to be in God's Word daily. You can't pass those things on to your children if they aren't fresh in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, as I read that book about Pig, Pig, and Lion, I had just read Isaiah, and something that I had read in Isaiah came to mind and connected with that book. So parents really need to be in God's Word daily so that they can use what they're learning and pass it on to their children as they're walking, as they're sitting in the car, as whatever they're doing.
Absolutely. Being an avid reader of God's Word so that we know it, so that we have it in our hearts and minds. And you're right in that setting an example for children or grandchildren, letting them see us read it and letting them helping them see that we set aside time for it.
Correct. So prioritizing it. Mm-hmm. You're right.
So that they see what becomes a priority for us, and hopefully they will also value that as well, that they would carry that value. We talked a lot about children and adults and parents all setting examples. What, just curious, I know we haven't talked about statistics much during this hour, but I'm just curious in terms of if you know how American children compare to other countries when it comes to reading skills. We've been talking about how important it is to spend time reading over the summer, whether it be relaxing reading or reading for a specific purpose. Any thoughts on that, or any information that you could share on how children in America or in North America compare to other countries, and for the purpose of how much more work do we need to put in during the summer?
right. Well, you know how statistics go. Everybody seems to have a little bit different spin on it, but I know a 2011 Harvard study ranked the United States about 17 in the world. 17th in reading, 32nd in math. We hear a lot about how we're more behind in math and science. I don't know that I would worry too much about that, comparing ourselves to other countries. We lived in China for a time, and I had a chance to observe their education system. The children went to school 6 days a week, and they had 1 month off in the summer. I'm not saying that I believe that's necessarily the way we should do it, because I do value that time, that downtime for parents to be teaching their children. But I do think they place a higher priority on education than we have in the past years. I think that's changing. I wouldn't recommend parents worry about it. A good parent who's spending time with their child, it's going to be okay. I think it will be fine. As far as the most alarming statistics have to do with the correlation between illiteracy and crime. There's a link between not being able to read and delinquency, violence, crime, and poverty. But again, the good news is when parents actively encourage reading by making books available to their children and reading with their children, they greatly increase their child's chances to succeed in school and in life. And in addition, they pass on their faith to their children while they're doing it.
So there's great value in learning outside the classroom, and it doesn't have to be a formal setting, is what you're saying.
I feel that way, and unfortunately, because of the busyness of both people having to work, sometimes that valuable time is wasted. But if you can't personally spend that time, is there a grandparent?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a close friend? Maybe an older, I do see a lot of older students babysitting younger students these days in the summer. A high school student may be a nanny to a child throughout the summer. And I love to see that as well, especially if it's a good student, a high-achieving student. They're bringing those kids into the library, and I love to see that. And they're saying, oh, I read that when I was younger. I really loved that story. And that younger child, you know, looks up to that person, and and they're passing on their love of reading to those children.
Certainly. There's great value in that intergenerational learning as well.
Definitely.
And here in Missouri, we have a good program in the public school system called the A-plus program, and it's actually for high school students who are looking at going to a community college for 2 years. They can, as part of the requirements to receive the A-plus scholarship, they serve as a volunteer or a mentor, generally in a middle school or an elementary school, as a reading tutor or reading buddy. And there's some great intergenerational learning and interaction going on there that I think
is a spectacular example. I love to see that.
And it doesn't have to be just, we've been talking a lot about reading books, but I think you've also pointed out reading periodicals, magazines, newspapers, newsletters,
definitely,
even blogs, and having the opportunity to open the doors to conversations about
correct
those as well, that all shapes our, not only our worldview, but our children's worldview. I know, my wife and I are expecting in September, and we've gotten a lot of books from friends and family over the last few weeks. And looking through the books, I've seen, I've come across quite a few that were some of my favorites as a child. And to see that they've withstood the test of time and that they've gone from one generation to the next is fun. It's encouraging, and I look forward to reading them with my son. You know, looking forward to reading them, probably hopefully a little bit stronger than I did when I was in kindergarten or when I was a child.
Well, it's funny, and you will find that you will remember those books that become your child's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Once somebody starts the book, you can almost repeat it word for word because you've read it so many times to them.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, about 15 seconds left, 15 seconds here left. Any encouragement to parents who are thinking about summer reading programs for their kids in the last few weeks, or anything else you want to share with us today, Brenda?
Well, I guess I would say take advantage of these programs. They're free programs. Go to the library weekly. Be sure that you're spending time. Don't rush in and rush out. And help your children find some good books, or just let them browse. Bring some books home for yourselves to read together, but for them to read to themselves. Just have fun.
All great advice. Thank you so much, Brenda, for being with us today on Faith and Family. You've been a great guest, and lots of great ideas about spending time reading together this summer.
Thanks you for having me.
Absolutely. Tomorrow on Faith and Family, we'll recap the National Youth Gathering and talk about summer youth camps at Concordia University Ann Arbor. Thanks for joining us on Faith and Family.